Welcome to episode 67, Josh, of the Rex Chapman Show with my super dope homeboy from the Lextown, Josh Hopkins. What's up, Josh?
Hey, how are you, Rex?
I'm good. Austin treating you well?
It is. How about Brooklyn? Yeah.
Brooklyn's good. My mom and dad are here.
No way. Are you in trouble?
My mom and dad are here. Yeah, I'm grounded.
You're on timeout. You know, grounded. I got to say, after it just reminded me, episode 67, which is remarkable to me, but I went last week. I went to the Dallas Golden State game
Dallas.
And at that game, there was four friends of the show. Steph, Steve Kerr,
Stan Van Gundy.
Stan.
And Candace.
And Candace Parker. All were
friends
there.
Of the show.
Yeah, all were there. And I ran into Candace and Stan at the same time. And I was like, hey, you don't know me, but you kind of know me, but you don't, but you do. I was the guy with Rex on his thing. And they were both so nice. They were like,
They were in the same booth. And about 2 minutes apart, I got texts from both of them saying, ran into Josh last night, just saw Josh.
That's great.
Amazing.
That's great.
So fun.
Yeah. So we've done a whole lot. Yeah, have you read anything this week?
Not a thing. You?
No, that's been book club.
Episode 67. I only know of one number 67 in all of sports, and that's Taj Gibson. I think he wore 67 for a year.
Wow, that's it. That's a heck of a call. Of course, I would go again, single Dr. J. And one that would just jump out to me, friend of the show, I might go with a Kenny Anderson.
Kenny Anderson. Well, you know, yeah, John Elway for the seven.
Yeah.
Kenny Walker was a seven for a while. I wore 7 1 year. How about that? In Miami. Remember that?
No, because you're a three. That's what you
I know.
You're my three.
I know. Okay? But I wore it. I wore a seven that year. Mickey Mantle was in failing health. And I thought, why not?
Oh, that's cool. I didn't know that.
Yeah, there you go. Also, it was the only other number Kenny Walker wore besides 34. And when he couldn't get 34, he combined them to wear 7.
They added it. I got it.
Okay, so real quick before we get to our guest, and decent guest today, but not great. So Brittany Griner, Josh, is coming home. Big news. Big news.
It's huge. I'm so happy for her. I'm so happy for her wife and her family. My immediate thought went to the disappointment of some of the other prisoners, citizens of the United States that are still imprisoned in Russia. And I just felt for them immediately because I can imagine their families.
Same.
But not to dwell on that, I'm so happy for them, so happy for her. I'm so intrigued to hear her story.
Same. I was frustrated when the news broke. Of course, I'm following on Twitter and I was just so disappointed to see how many people were upset, like, well, he released a bad guy and all that. Well, yeah, we did, but the U.S. is a compassionate country and we want our girl back from a vape charge. She spent damn near a year in prison, in a Russian prison, for marijuana. So I'm just
and
relieved.
There's two ways to look at it, and if you look at it that way and dwell on that, well, then you're a miserable person and you deserve your miserable life. And to them, I do want to say one thing. Shut your hole. Okay.
Thank you.
That pisses me off.
Brittany's coming home. Great. Okay, Josh, let's get to our guest. Naismith Hall of Fame class of 2001. All-time winningest coach in college hoops with 1,202 victories. 5 Olympic gold medals with USA basketball. And in 42 seasons, at Duke, he won 5 national titles and has an NCAA record 13-time Final Four appearances. Let's welcome Michael William Krzyzewski. Welcome, Coach.
Thank you. I didn't think you would go on the ledge and say Krzyzewski, but very, very impressive. You've earned playing time already.
You know, I said it, I was just saying it to myself last night, and I thought, you know, I probably ought to look up how it's pronounced. And then I did, and fortunately, I've been doing it right over the years accidentally.
Yeah, and I didn't know there were Polish people in Kentucky.
Coach, I want to get right into it. Thanks for doing this, but top of everyone's mind right now, should Christian Laettner have been thrown out of the game for stomping on Aminu Timberlake's chest in 92?
Yeah. Do you think, would you say that was a stomp?
Yeah, that's a stomp. Yeah.
It was a stomp.
That's why there's turmoil in the world, because our definitions of different things vary. So if it was a stomp, he probably should have been. He barely touched him. It was like a love tap. But, you know, that's all right. See, people can get caught up with that for the rest of their lives, and God bless them. It's a great life. It's a great life.
Oh, my gosh.
Maybe when I come back in my next life, I'll try it. But, I think little crap like that should be placed in an area that you don't spend a lot of time with.
Fair enough. Coach, what are you doing right now? I'm dying to know. You've been grinding for years and years and years, from dating back to Chicago and playing college ball, and you've always been in the gym. What are you doing right now to pass time?
Yeah, well, I don't want to pass time. I want to live. And if you start passing time, then you're not living. So, one, I'm still under contract to Duke for the rest of my life. I have my same office. Actually, my wife and I obviously we don't get paid like we did when we're coaching and don't deserve that. But I have my same office staff. I'm really doing the same stuff I did, as a coach, except I'm not coaching or recruiting. So they call it being an ambassador for the school, but I've been an ambassador for the school for 40 years. And then I do a lot of speaking for the Washington Speakers Bureau. I've probably had 20 events since August all over the country. And I love that. I used to speak. I've been speaking for them for 25 years, but never during the season or during summers that I coached the U.S. team. Now I can do it all the time. And I've loved it. I've learned so much, because you approach it like a game. There's a content call. I had an event, a virtual last night. But I've learned a lot. I haven't stopped learning. And then I still have my SiriusXM show. I've got 10 grandkids that live right around here. Four of the guys are playing basketball, so we're streaming. And then I just got finished doing, on the internet, there's a thing called Masterclass. Yeah. And that'll come out in about a week and a half or so. So I've loved what I've been doing, and I've learned a lot.
I can't wait to see that. But also, you've got your office there. I see you're in it. How difficult is it, though, being there on campus? You got, you know, John Shire is the new coach. Yeah. How difficult is it not wanting to peek in at practice and chime in and be a part of it like you always have been? Has that been difficult?
No, I really haven't missed coaching at all. Not at all. I mean, I've done it for 50 years, and when you had the U.S., I was ready to do something else. Now, as far as with John and I have a great relationship. I'll stop in practice for parts of practice maybe once a week. I never go to a game because there's no place to sit. I can't sit. Yeah, there's no box.
They'd make a box for you, Coach.
I wouldn't want. Well, then that would be the focus of attention. Right. I just want John. And John and I speak almost daily. We I was on the road doing a commercial out in L.A. For 3 days. And then when I came back, I wasn't able to see the Iowa game. And but yesterday when I got back, we spent time talking about that and where it's at. You know, John and I have a great relationship. He was my assistant and associate for 9 years. And then we had this runway. The way we did the succession plan, I thought was great because John could get really ahead in recruiting. And while I was still the head coach, and then it really, from the time it was announced that he was going to be the new head coach to when he coached his first game was 17 months. And in that period, one, he's now starting to think like a head coach, or he's asking me, like, what about this? What did you think when you were in these situations? But he's his own guy. I think he's terrific. And I not only think he's terrific, he is terrific. And, yeah. And I love him. And, you know, we're really good friends. And he's got to do it his way. But understanding the culture that he helped build, you know, it's not like it's something right. That's foreign. Yeah. But he's terrific. I really like what he's doing with the team. It's coming along. I think they can be pretty good. Yeah. And he's bringing them along really well. And they're really playing defense. And they have rim protection. And they have length, even though they're young. The offense and how guys fit is coming along. But they're right there defensively and rim protection.
Well, you did that as seamlessly as anybody could imagine, that transfer from a legend. And I'm sorry, that's exactly what you are. And people think of you and Duke together forever. So the seamlessness of that was really impressive. Plus, he went out and got two number one recruiting classes.
Right.
I mean, everything came together so well. But does he lean on you at all? And I know he's his own guy, but not only to critique games that have happened, but maybe come to you and say, hey, we got Izzo coming up. What do you think? What do you know? Tendencies? I mean, you've done it for 42 years there. Does he get critiques and then ask about upcoming games?
No, and I don't want to do that because in order to give a critique, I would have had to study the game, study the team. And if I was going to study the team, I should still be coaching, you know, like, we never talk about that. What we talk about is being a head coach, ideas that he has, or that he's, you know, that he's implementing or wants to implement, or just how he feels, you know, like, until you get into a position of leadership, you do not know.
Yeah.
What a leader feels. And so there's a newness. There's a newness there. And then I'm not going to say what it is. Very simple stuff. And he mentioned
from calling timeouts to anything. Never call,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah. Actually, when after they played, I think it was Ohio State, and I called him after the game, and I said, the best play of the game. And he said, what is it? I said, your timeout at 9:22.
He had a 5-point lead.
He had a 5-point lead. I said, a lot of people don't know how to call timeouts. You know, they listen to these TV and radio people say, well, we're going to wait till the team. Okay. You lost the game already, but you're able to help, you know, you saved the timeout. Like the timeouts are supposed to be used when you feel, and it was a big time move. And I said, I think it won the game for you. And no one, you know, because they can't put analytics or whatever with it. They're not, and stuff like that. But he was a really smart player.
Yeah.
And, he sees
John was a two guard, more of a shooter, right?
His senior year, he was like the point.
Okay.
But we play real fast.
Mm-hmm.
That team, he and Nolan Smith, Singler, that was our perimeter. with Lance Thomas and Zubek. So they were really big.
Good team.
And,
yeah.
And you know what? He was unflappable. He, you know, he's a 2,000-point scorer at Duke.
Golly.
Yeah. I mean, he was a great player here.
We don't see that anymore. We're not going to see many 2,000-point scorers anymore.
Rex, you know, he's about 6'6".
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't turn up. Now, you know, like today, every point guard wants to break you down with their handle.
Yeah.
And it drives me nuts. And,
me too.
No, because they don't, set up the team. In other words, here's something that I think over the last 2 years has happened. I think the vision of guys has narrowed.
Yeah.
In other words, there are very few guys in a half court who see the whole half court. Very few.
Mm-hmm.
There, and because of all the workout guys and whatever, their vision is on, like, I'm trying to beat you. They actually, Paolo had to work on that because he'd beat somebody, but it's not even a help side. It's the next defender.
Right.
Is getting his hands on the ball. No, the vision of guys, forget about peripheral vision.
Right.
Yeah, that's not even throw that word. It's like, I call it more like cone vision.
Right.
You know, like a, just like the cones they beat in their individual work.
Mm-hmm.
it drives
me. Yeah, I know. Me too.
I'm great against cones, coach. I'm a great cone. Well, I can go around any cone.
You know, the difference. Right. The thing that really gets me now is that, you know, you guys taught us and we were taught, you were taught.
Right.
You take what the defense gives you. You go, you know, if he jumps here, you go here. It was all about beating the guy. And now guys have prepackaged moves, dribble moves that right. they can go to. Well, I'm going to hit him with this crossover this time. And so there's a level of playing with the ball that we didn't do.
I call it like a nervous disorder, you know, like now they hardly anybody can just catch the ball and face.
Yeah.
And be
shot right.
And be shot ready, but also be play ready. They already have, they get it and they put it on the floor.
Yeah.
What happened to the jab step?
And they lose their first step. They lose, right. And if you catch it shot ready, then you can attack a closeout, which is the best thing to attack.
Yes.
Yeah. You know, he's not in balance and you are.
Yeah.
I don't know. To me, maybe my time is passed, but I don't think I mean nuts.
The Rex Chapman Show is sponsored by Fliff. Fliff is a social sports book with a chance to win cash prizes. Fliff customers can purchase Fliff coins, and then as a bonus, Fliff awards free Fliff cash with their purchase. Fliff is the only sports book that gives you free coins and cash daily. Sign up for Fliff, the social sports book. What makes us different, you ask? Fliff is a free-to-play sportsbook that awards real cash and prizes. Use the code BBNEWS for a 100% match bonus. No sports betting in your state? Try Fliff. Let's change gears for a minute. You're a Chicago guy. Growing up in Chicago, watching your parents do everything they could do to provide for you, is that a work ethic you gained right away, or is it something you understood as you got older?
I lived it with my mom and dad. You know, their parents came over from Krakow, Poland. And my mom never went to high school. She was a cleaning lady in Chicago Athletic Club. And my dad went to 2 years of high school, and he was an elevator operator and a mate, like a odd job guy at Willoughby Tower on Michigan Avenue. And
two years of high school, you said?
2 years. Yeah.
Wow.
And, but they believed in education and they believed in the dignity of work. You know, I learned the dignity of work. Work was not a bad word. Work was a word that gave you dignity. And I was a really good high school player and was going to go to either Creighton or Wisconsin. And Coach Knight came in from West Point, and that was like a godsend. Like my parents could not believe. They said, you have to go. That's where presidents go. And I said,
wow,
I'm not a president. I'm a point guard. I want to be
cone vision. You had cone vision then. I spread it out.
they spread it out with ethnic pressure. I never wanted to go to West Point, and they made me see, or I trusted them though. And I followed, they browbeat me for a couple weeks, not physically,
right,
but verbally. And I call it the best decision I never made. And and if nothing, none of this would have happened if that decision was not made, because that really is the base of everything that's happened for me. It started there. I best leadership school in the world. I played for one of the best coaches ever. I got a double dose of greatness while I was there, and hopefully, you know, some of it sunk in. And it did, not to the extent that it would with experience, but that would, and the kids, parents don't want to do that anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And kids, a lot of kids don't trust their parents.
Mm-hmm.
And okay.
Well, I'm thinking about that. Yeah. I going off to college, we all go off to college, and we all have, you know, those early days, whether it's conditioning or just being away from home or whatever. You're at West Point with Bobby Knight. Coach Knight recruited me when he was at Indiana. I know kind of a little bit about Coach Knight, and I watched all his teams growing up my whole life. Did you get on campus, Coach? And was there any time a month in or 3 weeks in that you were like, this is not for me, I've got to get out of here?
At least 100 times.
Really?
Yeah. And because it was so different. Like, I was like a golden boy in my neighborhood, and all of a sudden there were so many things I didn't know and couldn't do, like swim. You know, you grew up in New York City, you know, fire hydrants don't have depth, you know. if you went into Lake Michigan, you went up to your waist, you know. And so I was in rock squad for a whole year. You didn't learn how, I didn't, so many things, but also how to take orders, you know, how to be disciplined. So there were, hundred at least. And go ahead.
I can't imagine the because a lot of like players played for Bobby Knight. Everybody knows every practice was intense and really tough.
Right.
But then they got to go home or to their dorm. And you go back and you're in the Army, you know, that I can't imagine mentally and coming from where you came from, the difference, how that helped shape your character and work ethic.
Yeah. And you're right, Josh. And it forces you to become tough. It forces you, like a saying that we as cadets had was, failure is not our destination. And so when you are knocked down, get up. But when you get up, don't always get up alone, because the thing that knocked you down may be something that you can't do alone. And so it's kind of like an educational, it's like going to college and leadership and becoming that leader besides the courses you take. And, you know, going through it, you know, you don't know that that's happening. But as I look back for many years, I still go up every year to speak to the Corps of Cadets. They have an award there named after me, and we have a big thing. And I've kept close association with the Army and the Armed Forces. And because I learned so much, you know, I learned not to accept defeat, to figure out preparation to win. And again, I played for one of the great coaches. He prepared, but that wasn't the only place I learned it. I learned it every day as a cadet. And that's what I'm saying. I am have been an anal preparer. Like, I, for it doesn't make, and for every game, you know, every game. And I never want to be out prepared. And if it makes me feel like I call it, and I tell my players for years, be worthy of winning. Yeah. You want to win, that's cool. Prepare to win and be worthy of winning. And maybe the other guy's worthy of winning too. And right. times you're going to get beat. But you didn't beat you. Mm. If you lose, don't lose to you.
Right.
You know, make sure someone has an effort that beats you and then learn from it.
Do you ever have a difficult time turning off that anal preparation, like you go to dinner with your family and like, you're going to get the steak and you're going to get the potatoes and corn fritters over there. And we're going to leave here in 4 minutes. Do you ever have a hard time turning that off?
Josh, I've lived with four women my whole life. Do you think I could say that? My wife and daughters would annihilate me. Yeah. That's the beauty of having a great family. They keep you humble and fairly balanced from becoming a real sicko.
And, isn't that great, though?
Because it's terrific.
I have my son is 30, but then we have three girls, too. And I grew up with a sister, but having daughters has taught me so much about life. And so
is your sister older or younger?
She's 2 years younger.
OK, see, over the years, too.
You had older sisters, though, right?
No, I only had one brother.
And oh, OK.
He's passed 6'6", 250.
Wow.
Bill died about 8-9 years ago, and he never went to college, but he's a captain in the Chicago Fire Department. He's my wow. hero. And my dad died when I was a senior at West Point.
But, oh, wow. Yeah,
Rex and Chuck, over the year, you know, like in recruiting, I study people all the time and facial expressions, body language, and whatever. When we recruit, besides talent and knowing if they could fit our environment, I look at character and like what kind of kid he is. And I always look at the relationship a kid has with his mother. Always. The respect, does he listen? And over the years, guys who had older sisters were, they seemed to be more confident. Wow. I mean, it just the study of people, that may be wrong, but in my thing,
Josh has older sisters.
Yes, you got a chance, Josh.
Josh, yeah, you right. got a chance.
Yes.
I was wondering when you were a little bit earlier in this, I was questioning you a little, not right. outward.
But, right, right, right. Well, I guess all those years of never being able to get into the bathroom, it pays off later. I'm confident.
Yeah, patience.
Yeah.
Patience. And the ability of not saying something that will get you in trouble.
Right.
Can I tell you a quick story?
Sure.
All right. So I love my family. We have 10 grandkids. We are really close, and all my grandkids live within 10 minutes of us. And my daughters and my wife and I are together, and my oldest daughter is expecting our first grandchild, Joey. So as a guy, that'd be cool having a grandkid, but I've never thought like, what should I be called? Like in the guy's world, out of the 100 things you might think of, that wouldn't be, I don't think, one of them. All right. So I've never thought about it. So we're talking and all of a sudden, boom, the question, Dad, what would you want Joey to call you? And I make the biggest guy mistake. I answer the damn question. Instead of saying, what do you think? Like, it's it's the worst thing. So I all of a sudden you come up with some lame answer. So I still remember the day. It's so funny. And now,
so obviously he calls you Coach K, right?
No, I said, I said, Coach, and four, what? You, Dad, how could you? I said, peace, please. I'm sorry. I didn't mean it. I didn't mean it. And we came up with Poppy.
Poppy.
So that's of, well done.
That so, is well done.
But I tell all my assistants, all my young guys, I said, always ask, answer the question with a question. Wow. If it's in that situation, it's really a fun, but it's true. Like, don't say something that you haven't thought about, man, especially in an important thing like that. So crazy. Anyway,
fantastic. Yeah. Hey, Coach, I know we don't have you forever today. I got to get to a couple things here. Josh and I were talking last night, and, you know, we love Kentucky basketball. We, you know, live and die it. The programs and the way you guys, you and Cal, the last 10, 20 years, it's just been amazing to watch how you guys have adjusted. You know, and you especially going from having, you know, 4-year guys to, you know, then you get, you know, the 1-year guys, the one and Right. Dones. The thing I want to ask is, you know, we had a team in 2015 that was really good, 38-0. We almost met Yeah. You guys at the Final Four. We've had several teams like that, that have, you know, Devin Booker and Carl Towns and all. We just want to play in the tournament when those guys are 6 months older. Right. How many of those teams have you had where you've got the right guys, you know it. And maybe it's that Zion bunch. I don't know. But Yeah. Have you had a few teams where you just go, gosh, darn, in 6 months, he's going to be a different player. Right. You know, how can we fast track this?
Yeah, well, you can. You can't fast track experience. And when you get into the tournament, and look, the tournament is such a slippery slope. It's one injury, one kid being sick that day, one bad day for a bad 10 minutes. There's not much. And so, I've had a few teams that I thought were worthy of the national that never made it to the Final Four. We lost Sure. In the Elite Eight. Yep. And Zion's and RJ's team was one of them. But like the biggest thing that happened in that year was Zion's shoe blew out.
Yeah.
And our last game against Carolina, and he was out for 3.5 weeks. And when he came back, he was there, but he wasn't, and Right. Our chemistry wasn't there. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. Michigan State beat us by one possession, or else we're in the Final Four. We have Bagley and Wendell Carter and Gary Trent, Grayson Allen, and we lose in overtime. We have the last shot against Kansas in regulation and really have a 3-point lead and don't cover the three. And one of their shooters, good kid, hits a shot to send it into overtime. You know, it's one possession. Forget about, but in the national championship, look, Leitner hits a shot and we're in, or else we don't win that right. championship. I mean, there are things on your side, on our side that go, we're playing Arkansas in 94 and out of a timeout. I know Scotty Thurman's going to get the ball. I know it. We talk about it and we go for one of his fakes, but not that much. And we're within that. I think Tony Lang may even, his DNA might be on the ball. But again, you're also lucky, or you beat somebody where that happened to them,
right.
You know? And so I have no regrets about what happened because that's the game. That's the beauty of our game. But especially in our programs, or there are a few programs like this, that the culture, you have a culture. It's not the same, but it's a culture, and it's not just you're pulling for your team. You'll always be a part of that culture. And you guys you're lucky. We're lucky. Carolina's lucky. Syracuse, because Jim's been there so long, I'm not saying we're the only, but there aren't that many. And then you really, damn it, we could have had four more, but you probably could have had two less.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. that's what I was going to ask. It's a single elimination tournament. I mean, you got five, which is amazing, but a single elimination tournament is so, like, for the reasons you stated. Now, I would say if it were a three-game playoff each game, you'd have a whole lot more titles. You had the best team that lost on a day, but were there teams that you felt like, wow, we won this whole thing? And I'm not sure we were the best team that year. Like, the tournament fell in your way. How many times did that maybe happen?
A lot less, because I'd say in the first one, 91, for us to beat Vegas.
We just had Larry on. Larry was on a couple weeks ago and talked about it.
And, more, I think more the other way, because in order to get there, you have to be pretty damn good.
Yeah.
And, year in and year out.
Yeah. You gotta be really good. Now the tournament, you may never play somebody that would have beaten you.
Right.
That's happened for a number of teams where someone gets an injury, there's an upset, and all of a sudden, instead of 1-2 playing to go to the Elite Eight, it's 1-11. Right. And that's happened, for a number of teams. And I don't know that this should be, but some thought about reseeding the Final Four. I think a number of what happens in the Final Four too, at least it used to happen, the way the brackets are, I think they've taken care of it, but a lot of times the two best teams play in the semis and they play the second game,
right?
And anyway, if you looked at the history of the term, it'd be interesting to take a look at what that means. And but the tournament's beautiful. People are talking about adding teams and I don't think you mess with success. I mean, it's something there. And I always goof on some of the football guys. I say, you guys have it really tough, man. You have 120 teams and 82 of you go to bowls. Wow.
Yeah.
We have 360 and 68 go to the tournament. I don't know. And if one of our teams goes to the NIT, you went to the NIT? Yeah. And okay, what bowl did you go to?
You're right. Right.
It's a different. So
yeah,
what I'm saying is, I guess what I'm saying now, for the top level football, they're only going for one thing. Don't get me wrong.
Right.
But for basketball people, getting into that tournament is, I'm Catholic, like, God bless.
Yeah, right.
And God bless. And if you are fortunate to cross the bridge to go to a Final Four, come on, you're in God's country, And that's what I think it's what makes our game so beautiful. Hopefully the things that are happening now in college basketball will not ruin it, because it's a chaotic.
Yeah.
A chaotic time.
Right.
And
now,
how many years did you play?
College too.
Yeah. Okay. But you'll always be a Kentucky guy.
Right. Right.
You didn't transfer
Yeah.
two times. You fans, fans got to know,
get to know you, yep,
you, and follow how you progressed if you are a four-year guy. There's something about that, without saying kids shouldn't get what they get, you know, because if you say something different, it, people say, what are you against? No, I'm not against that. I'm just saying, here's what you're giving up.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, we got Sam Bowie. We have Sam Bowie, for instance. Yeah. Sam Bowie played 5 years, not necessarily he was hurt and whatnot, but those teams with Kyle Macy and, you know, Jack Givens, and when we had four-year guys, Charles Hurt, Melvin Turpin, Jim Master, Roger Hart, and all that, you get to know the kids. The community gets to know the young men and watch them grow up. And
Kyle was terrific. He was on our Pan Am team in 79. Right. Yep. And we're playing Cuba, and a guy punched him and broke his jaw.
That's right. Like, from That's the right.
And I love Kyle.
Yeah, great guy.
Like cerebral, man.
I want to ask you, there's so much I want to get to, but we've talked to Jay. We talked about, you know, your first recruiting class there at Duke and Johnny and those guys. I just want to know, I see it. You've got your USA basketball shirt on. Right. You know, I played for Team USA in the 80s. It's one of my greatest thrills to this day.
Right.
I just want to know what being a part of USA basketball has meant to you and your career. And, you know, after all that, I know you've had many opportunities to coach pros and coach in the pros, but being able to do that for Team USA, what's that meant to you?
No, it's been the best. I mean, I've loved Duke, and this is, if I never had US, this would be unbelievable too, but I've been the luckiest guy in the world. And I started coaching with U.S. in 1979 when I was assistant for Coach Knight, the Pan Ams. And I coached the last college team to play in 1990. We played in the World Championships in Buenos Aires. And at that time, it was Yugoslavia and the Soviet Union. Those two teams, if they were in the NBA, would be playoff teams.
Right.
Wow. They were that good. So we came in third. Then I was an assistant on the Dream Team, and I never thought I'd be the head coach. And then I ended up, and I was never the head coach. I became the first national coach where you had a four. And that was that in 2005, when Colangelo took over, we had to develop culture and continuity.
Yeah.
And he was magnificent. Really, in the last 25 years, I don't know if there's anybody who's done more for the game.
I played for Jerry in Phoenix. Great
than
man.
Then Jerry Colangelo. A great man. Hall of Fame, everything.
And a Chicago guy.
Southside, though.
Southside.
They're always a little, you got to watch. But no, it's the epitome of what you could, I mean, representing your country on the world stage. Come on. Yeah, it's the best. And for me, the 11 years I did it, I learned so much.
Yeah.
And, you know, I learned from watching individuals. I learned from what they thought, how they spoke, and then how good they could be if they played together.
Right.
And they did. You know, our guys were really good, and we were able to develop that culture. I mean, and we have close relationships. That they have a documentary now on the Redeem Team. Mm-hmm. You could see it. And then after I saw it the first time, I got in touch with Dwayne Wade and LeBron, and I said, you guys were amazing, but you were unselfish in how you honored Kobe.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And Dwayne said, you know, coach, we have to take care of our brother.
Oh,
and
beautiful.
That was kind of what I'm saying. They got that close.
This podcast is brought to you by Branded Bills, the best place online for premium headwear and apparel. Branded Bills has hundreds of designs available, including our popular state collection, where you can show your pride with hats, shirts, hoodies, and more for all 50 states. Are you a company looking to brand your business? Branded Bills also offers custom apparel options that can meet your brand standards with fast turnaround and shipping. To shop or learn more, visit brandedbills.com today.
Indulge me here, Coach. And I always had a theory that that team changed basketball nationally, worldwide, culturally, in the fact that I felt like the young guys, like Carmelo and Dwayne and LeBron, who worked hard their entire life, got to the pinnacle, and then they got on that team, and then they saw how Kobe worked. And I think, in my mind, that had to change something about them just seeing the Mamba in action, early shooting, late shooting, lifting. And it seemed like before that, it was cool to be like, I don't work that hard. I'm just gifted. And it's kind of cool. And to hide work. And after that, it was internet. I'm on my grind. It's hard. You outwork everybody. And I felt like some of that came from that team and that experience. Is there any truth to what they saw in Kobe?
Yes, somewhat. Although the guys on that team knew how to work.
Yeah, they were working.
Yeah, they didn't. They weren't starting in the basement. They were on the top floor of their building, whatever it was.
Sure.
Wow.
They just found out that you could add more floors, but you know what? Like Jerry Colangelo said, you know, Mike, we need to win the gold medal, but we need to win the respect of the world and our own country. I thought that's what those guys did. Like what you're saying, Josh. They did see Kobe. Kobe was also trying to transform himself.
That's right.
During that period, you know, he had transformed in Asia, in China. He basically, if it was a democratic country, he would be president of China.
Yeah, that's right.
He was that, really. It's crazy how well liked and admired he was, and he wanted to win the respect of his peers. And so he showed himself at the level that you're saying. Like, he's the most prepared guy that I've ever seen, ever. You know, we're meeting as a staff 2 days before we start practice. There's a knock on the door, and it's Kobe's 2 days early. And he says, Coach, can I talk to you? And so I go out and we're in a room, and he says, I need for you to do me a favor. And I'm saying, I hope he's not going to leave. Or, you know, my heart is. But he says something. He says, Coach, I want to guard the best perimeter player on every team that we play. And then he stops, Rex, he stops. And, you know, his eyes, he and Jordan have no eyes ever like those two guys.
Right.
And he leans forward and he said, and I promise you I'll destroy him. And I wanted to pull out a contract right there, sign it.
Right.
And
you know what, Kobe? You'll owe me, but I'll grant you that. There's your faith.
And so the other thing is, you know, he believed in moments, he dreamed of moments. A lot of kids don't, when you're off the court, dream of being on the court in moments. He did that. He knew that at some time he would guard Ginobili. That's what he was doing.
He's getting
prepared to guard Ginobili. First practice, he does not take a shot. Can you believe that?
I can.
Okay. So
it's just nuts.
I call him over, and he's got that, you know, that grin. I said, you got to shoot. What are you doing? He said, you know what I'm doing. And I said, yeah, but you led the league in scoring. You had 50-point games. You've destroyed people offensively. Will you please shoot? So that was a joke from then on, that I was the only coach ever that had to
Encourage him.
Encourage him to
shoot the ball.
Yeah, but he was
great.
Yeah, you know, another, because you'll like this so much, as a, you're a great player. Our first practice, Jason Kidd, we have drills and balls going everywhere. So we get together and I said, you know, and come on, you know, what the hell? And Jason said, I'll tone it down. And LeBron and Dwayne say right away, do not tone it down. Let us adjust to your, I get chills thinking about it. Yeah. It's such a great, we need to adjust to your talent. We haven't played with anybody like you.
Mm-hmm.
That,
wow.
That's what, to me, and I see,
and you know,
that.
Coach, I know. Yeah. And the funny thing about, you say that about Jason, I played with Jason. He made me so much better than I did.
Right.
When Jason could only play fat, if he toned it down, it was like he was messing around.
His
like
mind
he,
was,
his mind
he had to
was
go like, as fast as his mind.
Yeah. And so
he's
there would be days.
Players.
No,
yeah.
There would be days he just, you know, physically, you could see it. And we'd be like, Jason, just sit out. You're screwing up practice. You know, we need you for the games. Coach, we got to get to a couple more questions, but real quick, sure. I need to say one thing. You did something really, really nice for me. I don't even know if you think about it or know about it, but in 2015, I was fresh out of rehab, fresh out of jail, and was at the Final Four. And you had your team, I think it was Grayson Allen's team there.
Right.
And I was on the end of the court. I was doing some stuff for TNT, color for TNT. And I was just, I think I was walking back to get a bottle of water back in the locker room area or something. And you noticed me, platform court, you're up on the court. And as I was walking by, you motioned to me to come up on the court. And I went up on the court and you hugged me. And you asked me how I was doing. And it makes me want to cry thinking about it, because you were doing that for me. It wasn't for you. And I can't thank you enough. It meant so much.
Yeah, I'll tell you, that was a moment for me too. You know, I've always admired you as a player. You know, there are players that you don't get to coach that you would like to coach.
Oh.
You were one of those players for me.
Wow.
You had a spirit. There are, you know, there, people look at talent, they measure everything. How do you measure spirit? Like, you love to play, man.
Yeah.
And you love to play. And I love that spirit. And if a teacher or a coach can get talent and spirit, all right, yeah, it's going to be pretty good.
Yeah.
You know, you're going to really enjoy. And that's who, you know, I've always admired that about you. And I'm not BSing you. I would have loved to have coached you.
Yeah. I can't thank
Josh,
you,
on the other hand,
great inbounder.
Older best sisters.
Older sisters. That's right.
Yeah,
and the
best
inbounder you've ever seen, Josh. Fake pass to make a pass.
Do could you inbound clinics.
Could you sub after he passed the dunk?
Yeah.
Could it be could it be hockey?
Like
he gets
Coach, you did something great for me, but you did something really mean to me first.
Right.
What you did was you drew up the perfect play with Grant Hill and threw it in to Leitner, who didn't miss a shot or free throw that whole game. And it broke my heart and inspires me to this day. That team did. And that game's the greatest game I've ever seen. And then afterwards, I cried. I was already an adult. And I cried over a basketball game. And you spoke with such eloquence and giving an appreciation. And you spoke about that team and our guys, who were a lot of Kentucky guys. It felt like, you know, sons and brothers to us.
Right.
And the way you spoke was just so beautiful that I could never. I always was a Coach K fan for life after that. And I always appreciated that about you. What did you feel like when that ball swished?
You know, I never saw the ball go in because everyone stood up. But what I saw in front of me was a Kentucky player fall to the ground. Mm-hmm. And I get chills thinking about it, because if you're in this, you have to have respect for the other people in the arena with you. And that's what fans don't understand.
Yeah.
Like, and I my heart fell. That's what prompted me to say some things, because it's kind of nuts, really. Like that.
Yeah.
That was such an exhilarating win, but you saw,
if that ball doesn't go in, your guys are falling on the floor.
Yeah.
It's just,
it's just that moment. Again, no BS. I respected the hell out of that team. Rick did an unbelievable job. I mean, those kids, they hung banners, right?
Yeah.
They were culture turners.
Yeah.
Culture builders. So their championship was the culture that then now went forward. And great kids, great kids. But that's the thing I remember most about it.
Wow.
And then having the opportunity to talk to Kaywood,
Kaywood was the man. Yeah. Coach, what's your favorite movie?
I'm drawing a blank on that.
I didn't mean to stump you.
No.
All right, let's go to our second question, Josh.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Front row center. You see anybody, any sports event, any band, any speaker, dead or alive, you get to go front row center. Who might that be?
Well, my favorite singer of all time is Smokey Robinson. And really one of the, like, not only singers, but one of the great poets of, the songs and everything. And it, when I'm no one else is around, I practice my falsetto voice.
Okay, debut it here, Coach. This will be a big gap for us. Let's do cruising. Come on, hit it for it. 3, 2, 1, go.
In my 50s, I would have done it. Now in my 70s, I got it.
You got to dial it back a little.
I love live entertainment. My family and I, for a long time, would go up and see shows in Broadway. And 5 or 6 of them. And then I'd watch them perform, especially musicals, and try to understand they can do that and my guys can't run a damn out of bounds play. Like, they can do 2 hours of precision and we can come, let's do regular. What am I? I usually am in this position. Now I'm in that position. I said, well, if you want to be in a position on the court, learn to flip both damn positions, man.
Is that too much to ask?
Come on, really.
Know the play from your spot and his spot.
is that really that hard?
But you know it is for some guys. You know it is.
More guys now than ever.
Than ever.
There aren't many Battiers who...
That's right.
Right.
No.
That's right.
Everybody's position.
Hey,
Coach, could have been your inbounder. I'm just saying.
Yeah, that's right.
I know.
That's
right.
Hey, Coach, before we let you run, our Kentucky people will kill us. You got beaten the first round once by a very good CJ McCollum led Lehigh team.
He was the best player on the court.
Right. Yeah. And our Cats lost in the first round last year. Big deal. Cal starting this season, we got the defending player of the year coming back. Right. What are our Cats going to do this year? And how's Cal feeling right now in your mind?
Well, he's expected to win every game by a lot.
And
the fan base that will never be satisfied, even if you win the whole thing, because you have to win the whole thing by X number of points.
Right.
And to be able to handle that, I admire him. And he not only handles it, but then he reaches out in the community and
he
doesn't hide.
Yeah.
He has his own personality. It's a good one. And they're lucky that he has that personality.
Yes.
Because if it was just a pressure cooker, it explodes.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, he's done a pretty damn good job, hasn't he?
Damn right.
And bringing guys in, he's going to, I think he's navigated really well the transfer and recruiting thing. You got to be careful that in too many transfers, you hurt
your chemistry and all that stuff.
And the base of recruiting.
Right.
Both our programs have been able to recruit some really good guys. And in this world with NIL and the transfer portal, you got to be careful that you don't screw up that dynamic. But I admire John, and I are really good friends. And he comes from a background at five-star with Garf.
Yep. Yep.
You know, he's grown up a really good way. Yeah.
I agree. Coach, I can't thank you enough for doing this. We got to do it again. Please say hi to Mickey and the girls and the family and all the grandkids. Can't thank you enough.
And again, you're one of the few people in the world that my wife follows on Twitter. And I can't believe the stuff you find.
We've got good friends that send me stuff.
No, I follow too, but you don't know that.
Yeah, I know.
Now you know it.
And your burner.
Yeah, you bring a smile and a good feeling to people many times, and understand that you have that impact. It's a good one.
Thanks, man. It's a team game.
All right.
Thank you.
Right, is your burner Tweeter K?
Josh, do you think I'm going to you? Just inbound the damn ball, Josh. That's it. You have one job. Now you're asking for more.
Yeah. Thanks,
that's
coach.
That's your role.
That's your role.
You're on the team, man.
That's right. Be happy. You got a spot on the bus.
All right. See you guys.
Thank you so much, coach.
All right. You're welcome.
Josh, that was Coach K.
Wow.
Time flew by. We talked for an hour, and I had 100 more questions.
100 more. But just to hear him speak, to hear his voice, to hear him say my name, that was
– You're on the team, Josh.
Out. Yeah, I am. I'm an inbounder. But also, when I heard Coach K was going to come on, and I'm sure you did too, it was like, whoa, this is amazing. I can't believe I'm ever in a position to where I'm going to have a conversation with Coach K. And I know how much he's admired and how much I admire him. And you look at his background and his life from, nothing in Chicago and work ethic and going and serving and in the military and going to the academy and coming up and being the GOAT college coach, almost inarguably of all time, wouldn't him. And he doesn't let us down at all. He was exactly as what you would hope Coach K would be in every aspect.
Smart, funny, all clever, all of that stuff. Mm-hmm. The thing that gets me is I sit there and, because coaching and leading is about communicating. And you and I are two turds. So we recognize we're two turds. We sat here and you're a turd. I'm...
you're a piece of shit.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, sure.
So... What I find fascinating, he's sitting here talking to us, and you ask him about Kobe, and he starts talking about work ethic. And then he starts telling us, breaking down the difference in work ethic. He said, LeBron and Dwayne, they had work ethic. They were at the top of the work ethic building. He said they didn't know the building had another floor or two where Kobe was at. That kind of breakdown for a 17, 18, 19-year-old kid that's maybe going to come to Duke or is at Duke, you get little nuggets like that every single day from that guy.
Yeah.
There's no wonder why they're so good, why they're so tied together. Leadership, man, he's got it in spades.
Yeah, well, and he's earned it.
Yeah.
I mean, you go from where he's come from and you – play under Bobby Knight,
yeah,
and then have to go to the academy, and then you got to learn to, you get humbled,
yeah,
and then you can build from the bottom. And he's just an amazing man, and
I know
greatness in any form. It's a pleasure to be able to talk to and get to ask some questions. That was an all timer, Rex. Thank you.
I'm with you. Thank you, buddy. Want to do it again next week?
You know what? I would.
Let's do it again next week, Josh. That was Coach K, episode 67, Rex Chapman Show with super cool Josh Hopkins, powered by basketballnews.com.